What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Social Standard Podcast. My guest today is Phil Ranta. He is the Chief Operating Officer of We Are Verified, a digital management company helping creators build really interesting businesses. Hope I got that right.
You got it right.
So Phil's a really interesting guest, and we're kicking off today a series that actually explores B2B influencer marketing through the expertise and experience of people in the B2C influencer space. So Phil is an awesome person to have this discussion with because he has been around forever in this space, just like myself. So, you know, I think what's really interesting is you were number 9 at Fullscreen, right?
At Fullscreen, yeah. First head of a network.
That's right. And so you were and you've done a whole bunch of other things, but I think another highlight that a lot of people would know would be you headed gaming creators for Facebook for a while.
I did, yes.
As well, and then you're back to the influencer space now. And you've done a whole bunch of interesting things in between.
Yeah.
But welcome, first of all.
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as we explore the B2B influencer world through the B2C influencer lens, you have a really interesting story about a time when you were at Wormhole, and it's sort of this vegetation meets powerline meets B2B influencer solution.
Yeah.
I'd love for you just to tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we had built a really interesting metaverse technology, social metaverse. You can hold up your phone, you can see everybody else who's on the product. Sure. So think of like Facebook, except instead of a feed, it's the world, right?
And this was when?
Real world. This would have been 2019.
Okay.
So not too long ago.
Got you. Yeah.
And I know that because I left Facebook and went over there, and then the pandemic happened.
Right.
And at that point we said, okay, well, we might have to push back our launch plans a little bit, but this will all pass in a couple months. Lo and behold, it did not, right?
Yep.
So now all of a sudden we had this social technology, we had funds raised around launching and scaling the social technology, and we had nobody who was going to be social in a way that they could use it for a very long time. Naturally, we're not going to just pack up our things and go home. We already raised the money, so we transitioned it to be B2B, like an actual solution.
Like any good startup.
Right, exactly.
You pivot, right?
You gotta pivot. I mean, my whole career has been spent in digital content, B2C stuff. So for me, it was a very ill-fitting suit.
Sure.
But I was brought in as a COO, but then I became CEO when I was there during the pivot. And you have to figure it out, right? Because you've got investors. You have a fiduciary responsibility to try to make that investment work.
Absolutely.
So we started doing virtual real estate. We were doing tours of homes that agents could spin up really quickly and then have the metaverse drop in of avatars that they feel like they're walking through it, have the real estate agent drop in as an avatar. They could talk to them as if they're actually walking through the home. So
that's interesting because I bought a home in the middle of the pandemic.
There we go.
So I could have totally used that technology.
Yeah, 100%. And it's a really cool way. I mean, we already have Matterport and things like that with virtual 3D tours, but you don't have the sense of actual space and being there. So, or the social layer built on top of it. Then we also started working with vegetation control and power lines and utilities who needed something that allowed them to access cameras to see when tree growth, LIDAR to see if there was tree growth hitting the power line. So we figured it out. We made it work on the B2B side. Naturally, since I have left then, because once the company was doing well, it was time for me to take a step back because it was not my world at all.
Yep.
But B2B saved us in a lot of very real ways when B2C couldn't work.
Interesting. Yeah. And you said, I mean, specifically, because it was, if I remember, you had this issue where you needed it was something to do with cameras, right?
Yeah.
And you need to be able to, like, they were doing everything manually.
Yes.
Right? The power lines, right? The power companies were going through and trying to manually have people walk up and down lines to see what was happening. Where is this need? And you said, hey, we have a technology.
Oh, 100%.
That can solve this.
And frankly,
right?
As you start looking at a lot of businesses, institutional businesses, it's shocking how much technology feels like it's in the 90s. There's a lot of people in clipboards out there. And you say, well, at this point, they must have a CRM, right? What is it really like everybody in real estate has a different MLS that holds a database of their stuff? And it's like,
actually,
that's how old school it is.
Just like in the influencer world, P.S., everyone lives and dies by Google Docs.
Oh, for sure.
It's like technology is great, but everyone's got all their stuff in Google Docs.
And whenever we talk to a technology where we're like, yeah, we're using Google Docs, they're like, oh, we're going to make you so much more efficient. And then we trial it and it doesn't.
Exactly.
And we go back to Google Docs.
Exactly. So, exactly. But you said, I think one of the things I thought was interesting was you found a B2B influencer.
Oh yeah.
That spun this up for you guys. So all of a sudden you're like, okay, great. So you have the power company, but there was a problem. What was that problem? Remind me of
there was vegetation that was growing too close to the power lines.
Yes.
It would knock out power.
But you couldn't quite get people. There were some groups that you couldn't get aligned.
Well, it was really, really hard to figure out who controls that world.
Yes.
So we were able to find somebody who had kind of the number one podcast on vegetation management. micro niche, but like the America's foremost expert on this stuff.
Yeah.
And then they were able to come in and really help us out. So we created a joint venture and now we're rolling on it.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, one B2B influencer.
Yeah.
Or one influencer that's impacts the B2B space.
Right.
Took you guys from like shaky ground to like actually having like sizable revenue.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, oftentimes there is kind of, in almost every company, there's that like one or two missing pieces that if you had in line, it would go from a failing company to a thriving company.
Exactly. And this was that for you guys.
Totally. Right? Well, oftentimes the go-to-market, right? Because it's very easy. And I know that product people are going to be screaming at their computers when they watch this, but it's very easy to find holes in the market and then figure out a solution. It's really hard to execute and scale.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's, and influencers are a great way to do that.
Totally.
And I think you really hit on the head there. Something that I find to be true with, especially within the B2B influencer world, is that it's not about vanity metrics. It's not about finding the vegetation person who has a million followers.
Right.
It was about finding that one guy who owned that niche.
Right. Who influences the 100 people we're trying to reach.
Yes, you know? Exactly. And I think probably you guys were able to do that because you came from the creator world.
Right.
And you saw that and you recognize it as an opportunity.
It's always been my secret sauce is like, I am somebody who executes by finding people who can execute better than I can execute and then doing a deal with them.
Right? That is the gold standard of a COO.
Well, you have to be, you have to humble yourself enough to say like, what's the most efficient way to do this? And it's seldom, well, I'm going to stay up late every single night and grind this. Like, that's a bad COO.
That is bad.
What CEOs would do without a COO. Right?
Yes, that's what I've found myself even in that situation. Where what am I doing? No, I've got to figure this out. So yeah, exactly. Well, that's super cool. I mean, I think it's a great example of just the power of B2B influencers.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's, you know, that is the world that like where the social standard is starting to play in a lot more with clients like Adobe and Zendesk and Veridesk and more. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have a strong POV on the B2B space. And I think, you know, one of the things that in our preliminary conversations I thought was really interesting was you were talking about, listen, you know, it's not B2B influencers are part of the pie, but B2B's got to take a step back.
Yes.
And they have to look at this as like a full funnel approach to social, much the same way that you see B2C organizations doing that.
Right.
So give me a little bit of feedback, like in terms of like what you think makes sense for, if a B2B marketer says, yeah, I want to be in with influencers, what are you recommending that they also do?
I mean, at first they just have to stop thinking of B2B influence like B2C influence. It's very different in so many ways, right? It's not about scale. Nope. It's like, oftentimes when you're doing a B2C campaign, they're like, what's the reach? What's the engagement rate? What's the demos? What? Throw all of that to the side, right? When you're doing B2B, it's like, what's the goal? What kind of deals you want? Who influences the influencers? Who's actually a thought leader and who's somebody that people just follow, right? There's a big difference between a Tony Robbins and a Gary Vee in a lot of ways, right? So you got to find like the right emotional match to it. And then how do you do a partnership where there's real buy-in? And also, do they have the pipes to actually get the message out in a smart way, right? A lot of people who are B2B influencers, they might have a newsletter, but another one might have a LinkedIn page. And you have to say, well, which reach is more powerful reach, right?
Exactly.
And oftentimes it's the newsletter because that's deep, deep engagement. And LinkedIn, it's kind of like they can scroll through,
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be akin to like creators who have created communities off of Instagram or YouTube or wherever, right? They have, that's a strong base. Like I know I'm in a few Discord channels with like social media managers because I want to know what they're talking about, what they're seeing, what their trends are doing. And so that's a very powerful tool, whereas I can follow, you know, folks like you in the space as well and get kind of more of a broad perspective on what's going on. So I think you have a nice 10,000 view sort of strategy, and then you've got the nitty gritty strategy. And I think you can definitely get both in B2B. But I do think that it's something that's growing and has been growing. I think from where I sit, the last sort of, I would call it really 6 months. You might say more like year and a half, two years. But it's something that we've been asked to do by brands like, you know, Intel. Everybody wants us to come in and do B2B. And we've always said, look, it's just, there's just not enough scale there historically. Sure. And it's such an expertise that like we were off to the races on B2C. And there was so much to do there. And there's still so much to do there.
Right.
But now it's like all of a sudden you're saying, hey, great. You know, digitization, just like, you know, what happened at Wormhole sort of pivoted you guys. I think the digitization of everything has pivoted everyone, including leaders.
Yeah.
Right. And they have to be in a platform. And what platforms make sense? Like, you know, is a CMO of an AI company going to go out and start a YouTube channel? Probably not. right? But would they start a LinkedIn following? Mm-hmm. Of course. Are they on Twitter? Probably. So to me, all those things sort of ladder up to make this really interesting time for B2B. And then you have Twitter, which I historically always associated with B2B marketing.
Right.
They're going off the rails, right?
Right, exactly.
We don't know what they're doing.
I kind of devalued my Twitter a little bit.
Yeah. Doubled down on LinkedIn. Also, I actually am really, I'm really bullish on Twitter in the long run. I think that's probably a different perspective than most people would have.
Sure.
But I am bullish on them in the long term, and I've never been bullish on Twitter, which is
really
funny.
Yeah, interesting.
Never. I've never liked it. I always thought, you know, what a waste. But now I don't think that. I don't think that at all. I think that they're so far behind that they could get ahead.
That's fair. When you're far behind, you can take big swings.
Exactly.
That a lot of
and
people
they have
are
to. Their backs right. against the corner. But regardless, I think that's what I always view as like the traditional B2B marketer. And then the rise of LinkedIn has been honestly astounding in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
The community is really incredible. Mm. The way that people share, it's just poised to be, I honestly think it's like the Facebook of the professional world.
Oh, for sure. Right? It's getting there. Yeah, really quickly. And thank God I started getting really into LinkedIn. So it was actually my New Year's resolution from 2016 to 2017.
Oh, really?
Where I said, because I came back from a networking event in that December.
Uh-huh.
And even though it might not have looked, we were at a networking event together last night.
Yeah.
And although it might not have looked like it at that, when I don't know anyone in the room, you will never meet someone more awkward than me. I need like a way into conversations or else I'm like, I don't know how to do the like, hi, I'm Phil. You don't know me, but like, I'm just bad at it. So I came home from a networking event. I felt like everyone knew each other and I didn't know anybody. Mm-hmm. And I felt like such a goon. And I'm like, I've been doing digital stuff for 12 years at that point. What the hell am I doing? And then I was like, all right, my New Year's resolution, I'm going to post about my digital expertise every single day in all of 2017. And
really?
I did that on LinkedIn, and suddenly I got this, I think I got like 10,000 followers, and I did like 450 some posts that year, and
wow,
then I got an incredible amount of followers, including like the president of Nintendo, and all of these random people, and
incredible.
I was like, I cracked it. These are people I literally couldn't talk to at conventions. They're untouchable.
Yes,
and now
exactly.
all of a sudden they're reading my posts every day.
Right? It's incredible.
Yeah. So I just kept doubling down on Twitter. And now here I am, you know, 12 years into my LinkedIn journey. And
I
said Twitter before. LinkedIn. Yeah. I've doubled down on that. And now it's like I barely go to networking. I mean, I've got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, so I barely go to networking events. But all of my business is inbound now. I hardly ever go outbound.
And that is a story that I hear consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that and specifically around LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I don't hear it quite as much around Twitter, although I'm sure it's there.
Sure.
I just think that LinkedIn is in this sort of, we've been in this space for a while, right? So you've seen Facebook, you've seen Instagram come up, and Snapchat, and TikTok, and like all these sort of things. So you know there is this magical time where you can actually build a following on a platform. And that, in my opinion, is where we're at with LinkedIn now.
Totally.
Right?
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, my following, I have not been doubling down on my following as hard in the past 2 years as I did previously, but my following has grown a lot faster.
Well, you're already at like 23,000, I think I looked this morning, right? Maybe
like
almost 24,000?
It's got to be around there.
That's big.
Yeah, I mean, it's oftentimes people will point to other people that started after, and they're like, look, they have 200,000 people, and I'm like, yeah, but my number one company of followers, Apple, my number two is Meta, my number three, like, these are real followers. My number one job title that follows me is founder, number two is CEO.
Yeah.
I'm like, cool, I have 23,000 and other people have hundreds of thousands, but mine are super digital founder, CEO focused people.
But it's even that trend we've seen in B2C where it's like niche down. If you really want to have an impact on your business, you niche down and you start to talk to people. And I think that with LinkedIn, it's a natural niche down platform.
Totally.
Right? Because a lot of these posts, it's like even if you have a viral post, it's not going to be seen by all of LinkedIn.
For sure.
Right? Whereas TikTok, that's not the case. You could basically sweep the nation, sweep the world with one post.
I think Zach King got one post that had 1.3 billion views or something like
that.
So
it's doable,
massive.
Right? Yeah. But that's just not what LinkedIn is about. And I think that's good. I think they absolutely fall into the community side of apps, whereas I think like YouTube and TikTok fall more into the entertainment side.
Totally.
Right.
And frankly, everybody talks about like the future of social is building community. And I agree. I think even more than building community in terms of the marketing side is to build loyalty.
Yes.
And loyalty is oftentimes something people don't talk about because it makes it sound like the followers are subservient to the talent, but that's what marketers want, right? They want a little subservience to the talent.
A little bit, And I think that's, you know, people idolize people who they, you know, they think are interesting.
Right.
And I think that that's a natural progression. So
for sure.
I get semantics maybe a little bit wonky in that term, but that's definitely, I mean, it makes sense.
Let's throw semantics out the window. Let's look
at
Taylor Swift for what she is.
Yes.
Taylor Swift's followers are followers.
Yes.
It is a parasocial relationship. She's 100%. Not, she's untouchable. She's not talking to them. But that's what makes them so powerful, is no, they will live and die by conspiracy theories around her.
Oh, 100%.
And every B-side. Yeah, Swifties are strong.
Yeah, yeah. And who had done an article recently about the, it's like Swiftonomics, about how when she goes somewhere, it like, it changes everything. It's like sort of like the Super Bowl, you know, or the Olympics. You want to get her into your town because the ripple effect that she has on tourism, on restaurants, on hotels, on everything is outrageous.
Well, look at her following. It's the most valuable following for marketers. It's teenage girls.
Right? Like, 100%.
And wealthy teenage girls because it's very expensive.
Oh my gosh, so. I know. I wanted to go to the concert and I was like, I'm not going to do this. Right. It's just too much. I'll listen to it on Spotify.
I got my wife tickets to the concert for, and that was her birthday and Christmas because that's what it took. And even then,
like
$1,000. I got a little cheaper because I had a little way in, but it was still like the most expensive concert we've ever got tickets for.
Oh, 1,000%. And I saw Beyonce in a Dodger Stadium, and that was pretty expensive.
Oh, totally.
But Taylor Swift is next level.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, I mean, would I have gone if I could get my act together and get a bunch of girlfriends? Of course.
1,000%. Of course.
And I saw a lot of people doing it. And my whole Instagram feed is basically, you know, my For You feed is
everybody's seeing that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting. But maybe Taylor Swift is on LinkedIn. I don't know. I'll have to check
and see. Maybe. We'll see. I mean, Mr. Beast is on LinkedIn, so
he is.
You know.
A lot of creators are moving over there because they realize it is a lead gen opportunity,
right? Totally.
Which is so interesting. And I think to me, and we can debate this a little bit, but to me that's why LinkedIn is sort of, I think, poised to be, if not already, the darling of B2B marketing.
Yeah.
From a paid standpoint, because I've seen a lot of stats that show really good stuff in terms of like baking in LinkedIn paid ads in terms of your for everything.
Sure.
Right? I mean, I know even as an agency, we looked at, you know, we've spent money on Google, we've spent money on LinkedIn. It's always better on LinkedIn.
Of course.
Yeah. Google is just, honestly, a total mess.
Well, you can segment on LinkedIn by job title and industry.
Exactly.
And so that's it's just so specific that it's got to win, you know?
And it's, and that's why it's so expensive, right?
Of course.
So that's a little bit of a downside of it. But I mean, I just think that this is where the conversation is heading, is all on LinkedIn. And we've had great success.
Yeah.
We just did some stuff for Zendesk the other day. It was really impactful. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, what's your POV on influencers that are B2B focused on LinkedIn? And like, where do you think we are in the trajectory? Right?
I think that, so we've done a couple of smaller campaigns on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So I'll talk about the pluses and minuses.
Sure.
The pluses are, yes, you can get very specific and very targeted. You don't need a lot of, you know, following in order to be valuable. The downside is threefold as I see it.
Okay.
One is LinkedIn is an incredibly personal platform.
It is.
So a lot of times they're like, a lot of creators say I have to care about the brand in order to do it, but on LinkedIn it has to be almost like something you would say already and you're just getting paid to say it. It's got to be deeply, deeply personal because like your personal brand is so tied to LinkedIn.
It is. Yeah.
So I went out with a pretty good campaign once and I got 40 no's before I got one yes with pretty good rates. Yeah. Because it's just like people are like, I mean, half of them outright said, I don't do paid on this. Like, this is about me getting economic opportunity for my business.
Sure.
And that's worth more than any shout out.
Yeah,
and like,
that's fair.
Totally get that. Two is the prices are so inflated because if you're talking to a CEO of a company, they're like, I don't get out of bed for less than $20,000.
And it's
like, if you're going to them with a $2,000 campaign, they're like, no,
definitely
it's not even
not.
Worth my assistant writing this for that. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And then three is LinkedIn as a platform is just not attuned to influencer marketing in such a way that it like, yes, it will probably stand out and be shocking, but it could also be seen as cringy and weird. Right.
Sure.
So, which can change once the culture of LinkedIn changes.
Sure.
That's going to take a little while and it's going to take some brave souls to have a little bit of the scars on them. Like they'll have to take the arrows for everyone else.
That's interesting. So when you were reaching out, were these were much smaller creators?
No, they were huge.
Really?
They were huge.
See, we've had almost the exact opposite.
Like really?
We've had the bigger the creator, the more receptive they are. Now they are expensive and they are busy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that we always caution brands to say, look, B2C influencers, we can turn you something around in 2 days if we have to.
Totally.
Right? But B2B, I mean, no.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are busy. They have schedules.
Right.
Like, we've got to get in and get into their content planning division. But we've had people be really receptive to it.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Now, it's been more, you know, for Zendesk, for example, it's been more of like AI stuff.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to be out there and talking about things.
Right.
And I think that a lot of it is the way that you do it as well.
Right.
Right? Because to your point about loyalty and like all that, I think there's a lot of that on LinkedIn, right? And people are, are they really sort of precious about their personal brand and all this sort of stuff? Sure.
Right.
But the reality is like, if you can create a strong, authentic partnership why would you not do it?
Oh, totally, yeah.
You know?
And if it's part, if it's something like AI that's part of the cultural conversation, yes. I would say it's easier, yes, right?
Totally.
So I think that being tactical about what the the brand and the brand message is, it almost needs to be a LinkedIn-y, LinkedIn exactly. zeitgeisty thing.
Yes, 100%.
Or else it's much harder.
Got to be a full strategy. Right, no totally. Question. I mean, and you also, but people on LinkedIn are all about learning and sharing knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you can approach it from that standpoint, and less of like, hey guys, go check out.
Right, totally.
You know what I mean? That's I think where as a B2C influencer marketer, you mm-hmm. have to throw everything out.
Totally.
Right. You can't approach with that same sort of style of talking. Yeah. Because the way that influencers on LinkedIn speak to their audience is much different.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And so laying things out, informing people, doing all of that, I think all that's super important because I mean when you look at the B2B funnel, right, mm-hmm. the sales funnel, it is very long.
Yeah.
Right. And you don't just get to, sure, if I am a L'Oreal, mm-hmm. you know, I can sell a bunch of lip glosses because it's no sweat off anybody's back if it doesn't work because it was $15.
Of course.
But here we're talking about huge SaaS solutions in a lot of cases.
You're looking to get 10 new customers.
Yeah, exactly. And you're talking about millions of dollars potentially, and you can't just remove the product if it mm-hmm. doesn't work well. So there's a lot of research has to go into this beforehand. For sure. And what better way to do that than to go into LinkedIn, see what people are talking about, and then also these like, people are calling it dark social.
Yeah.
But where you do it in the DMs and right. you're talking about that stuff. And that I think is really powerful on LinkedIn.
100%
because
agreed.
So many people that I have talked to have said, hey, a lot of the business that I'm getting on LinkedIn is not coming from people who are interacting with me.
Right.
Or have like really, they've only seen a post one or two times.
Yeah.
And those are the people that are converting.
Oh yeah. My in-mails are fantastic.
Yeah.
Because right? oftentimes people will just search influencer marketing or influencer management, and then I'll just pop up through them. And luckily, I've got a Top Voices badge, so I think that makes me stand out a little bit. And then it's like they'll reach out and just say, hey, I don't know if you're the solution, but I think you can point me in the right direction. And sometimes I'm not the solution, I do point them in the right direction, but when I'm not, it's like it's literally people just saying, here's my money, please take it and solve my problem for me, which is the dream.
Yeah, exactly. And that it's more of a it's a pull versus a push strategy. Right. And that's really sort of where I think we are in marketing. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's, again, that's nothing new. I always say everything is a cycle. That's just where we're at in the cycle of this.
Totally.
So I see that as a really big, powerful thing. And I mean, there are a lot of groups, there are a lot of communities, there are a lot of interesting things that are happening. Mm-hmm. You said you're a top voice, right, mm-hmm. on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
That program is massive.
It's great.
Right.
Yeah.
And you've even said that's LinkedIn has done a lot of meetups with that program, right?
Yeah, we've done meetups. We've done like Google Meets where they've kind of downloaded us on things. Like they send a newsletter that says this is what's trending, this is what we're talking about. It's a full-fledged program. They're doing a great job. The partner managers there are, Cayman's my partner manager there. Okay. He's killing it. He's fantastic.
Nice.
But like a big part of what they're doing right now, because he focuses on the creator economy stuff, he's trying to get actual creators to come in and actually talk LinkedIn and the way that LinkedIn is. And I think that it's a noble pursuit for that.
It's
something that everyone's curious about because they're on social media to talk about business. So why not talk about the business of social media?
Exactly. Yeah. 100%. And I mean, I think, you even have Reed from Nighthawk Media, which is Mr. Beast's company.
Mm-hmm.
He's on there. He does a great job.
Oh, yeah. And Ezra, who's my former boss, who's the president over there, mm-hmm. is still, they're... Night Media is doing a fantastic job of all of their
Night
employees
Media,
really
Nighthawk,
hitting it.
That to me is like the business side of like behind closed doors of how Mr. Beast does things or how these big name creators do things.
Yeah.
I think is really, really pretty interesting. And I see a lot of social media managers on there talking shop in a lot of ways. And so, you think about those guys. And so I think LinkedIn says 4 out of 5 of its members are business decision makers.
Wow.
So that feels a little high to me.
That does.
But, it's sourced from LinkedIn. So, of course, they're going to be a little bit more. But, I think it also depends because if you include, I think 54% of their users are 30 to 50.
Mm-hmm.
And about 65% are 24 to 35.
Right.
So there's a little bit of overlap there. That's why it adds up to more than 100.
Sure.
But, a lot of that, if you think about it, you have these social media managers, these social people, social media individuals who are influential in some way there, they're all talking about things and tools and all that sort of stuff. And so really, these guys are decision makers as well. Because if they're figuring out what scheduling tools, what social listening tools they want, like, I don't make those decisions. Mm-hmm. The people on my team that are going to use the product, they're the ones that are empowered to make those decisions.
For sure.
So even though it might be like, I'm the target, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Actually, you probably want to talk to my AMs.
Right.
Right? 100%. And get their buy-in, and then they influence me, and then we buy it.
Yeah. Well, like, what does it mean to be a decision maker these days? Yes. Oftentimes, the frontline people are, like, our talent managers and account managers at our place, they really are decision makers, because I don't have time to dig into every little deal. So.
Exactly. And you're not going to be using it anyway.
Right.
So it's like, if you're using it and this is what you want, sure, go ahead.
Sure. Absolutely.
Right? So I think there's a lot of interesting stuff there, but I also think that when you're looking at things like construction management software, is LinkedIn the right place for that? I don't know, probably more Twitter.
Right.
Right, but kind of finding those audience demographics, I just think, to me it's like, look, LinkedIn was in 2019, there were 645 million following, and I think that's right when Microsoft bought them, another 930 million global users.
Yeah.
That's a lot of growth.
For sure.
You know, I think by 2026, I believe, they're estimated to be like 7.7 million in revenue. That's double from where they are, you know, now.
Absolutely.
So all signs me point up and to the right,
right
on LinkedIn. But I do think you're right. There are some tactical things we're going to have to figure out. Mm-hmm. And I think if we lean on our knowledge from the B2C space when influencers were new and didn't know exactly how to navigate the waters, or once you have the boon of micro-influencers, nano-influencers coming up where it's like, these guys are doing another job.
Right.
It's not just like, I'm a social media influencer with 4 million followers. It's like, I have a day job here, and then on the side, I also do this. And it's like understanding how those, what speed bumps we hit working with those individuals, I think can be applied really well to B2B stuff.
Oh, yeah. And figuring out how to talk to businesses. Because like Adobe will get it, right? Yeah. But if you're talking to the vast majority of businesses about B2B, they still are doing the $1 million builds at conventions, and they're saying, well, 20,000 construction people are going to walk through my booth, and therefore it's that. And it's like telling somebody that they can get $100,000 for $100,000, get 200,000 construction people to engage with a newsletter with a link. You know, it's such a different story.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are Luddites out there. They're not like full Luddites. Like, I'm not going to touch a cell phone, but when you start talking about digital marketing, their brains melt out of their ears.
Yeah.
And it's all about like, how do you talk to them in their language?
Exactly.
Because the hardest part of influencer marketing in like 2012 was going education. To Pepsi and being like, all right, YouTube is not just sneezing pandas anymore. Here's what it is, and here's how, you know, it was a really hard conversation to have.
Oh, yeah. It's like when you had to explain to someone what an influencer was, it was like, oh, my gosh, and now here we are, right?
And you'd hear the same thing for every single marketer. What a world. Yeah. My grandkid watches the YouTube all the time, and like, well, is this really a thing? That's crazy. You're like, yes, it's really a thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think is so interesting about TikTok, too, right, is that you have now those people who have, like, grown up, weren't on that sort of stuff, all their kids are using it, and so they see the power of it.
Oh yeah,
for sure. But yeah, I mean, look, I think it's an interesting space. I think we have a lot to do, and I think, you know, the reality is like, we're just at the beginning.
Oh yeah. It's still, all of digital media is still early, and I feel like I have to constantly remind people of that.
You know, that's a good perspective, because I don't feel that way
in
I mean, I understand that that's the case, but I don't feel that way because it is the world that I live in.
Sure. Right? Yeah, absolutely. But it's, you know what, really, broadband has only really been pervasive for less than 20 years. And, you know, social media really didn't start taking off until like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I got Facebook when I was in college. I was part of the college rollout, but it was 2005. Yeah. Like, that's not that long ago.
And I thought
it
was weird. I was like, I'm not going to post.
Yeah, it was a dating site at University of Michigan. It's like everyone could put in their class schedule, see what girls or guys were in their class, be like, you want to sit next to me? Like, that's all Facebook was back then. And lo and behold, like, I mean, even 2012 or 13, I wouldn't say that we arrived. It wasn't like brands knocking down our doors until like 16 or 17.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's really, and B2B, like LinkedIn, like you said, really the past year or two is when people actually started coming up to me and being like, hey, you don't know me, but I saw your face on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
That wasn't happening in 2019, you know?
But it is, I mean, it is happening now. And I think it's interesting too, for those of us who have been in the influencer space for so long.
Yeah.
Like, I never dip my toe into trying to be an influencer.
Right.
It was never for me.
Right.
But doing it on LinkedIn, I'm all in.
Oh, sure.
It makes perfect sense. You can share your thoughts. Like, I have expertise. I have something of value to offer.
Yeah.
And I don't have to like stage everything of every part of my, you know, it's not as much of a lift.
Yeah.
But I will say one more question for you on that is like, when you think about content on LinkedIn, do you think that this sort of edutainment style trend that we see on TikTok with short form video is ultimately going to be a fit there? Now, less gimmicky, I would say, of course, but like just more, I would think more like Jon Stewart
Right.
You know, you don't have to be funny, although maybe that's actually a great, this is maybe a great segment for you.
Right.
But do you think that video and educational, short educational videos are ever going to make sense?
I think there'll be a space for it, but I think that it probably should live, it should be most successful and separated from the feed, right? It's kind of like the same way that Instagram realized that Reels needed its own little thing because some people just want to look at pictures. I think that LinkedIn, there's going to be a fair amount of people who, first of all, are flipping through LinkedIn at work and don't want loud videos coming up all the time, or they just want the information quickly, so they want to roll through.
I
still think the most powerful stuff on LinkedIn is going to continue to be infographics, text. But yeah, I think that there probably will be video influencers on LinkedIn. I think that LinkedIn Learning is probably going to combine with the feed eventually. And
that makes sense.
I think, like, I am very bullish on this. I say it to anyone who listens. I think job retraining is going to be a huge market in the next 10 years. Mm. How do we make education cheaper? Everyone that's losing their jobs or need to upskill because of AI are going to need to figure out how to, like, how do you do that for $100 instead of $15,000? Yeah. It's going to be huge. I think LinkedIn's going to be a great home for that if they can get it right.
Yeah, that's probably true, right? And it ladders up nicely with the jobs
functionality.
Absolutely. So, yeah, maybe. Huh. Either that or it's going to be
my next startup. We'll see.
Hey, there you go. I think there are a lot of startups out there right now, even that are doing educational-based stuff.
Totally.
So it makes sense. Even universities, I mean, have kind of figured that out in a lot of ways, although not cost-effective enough.
Exactly. They need to figure out, if I'm putting all my classes online, why am I charging people $40,000 a year to go here?
Yeah,
I think
no
they need to
that.
Figure that out.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually something I say all the time. Is look, if you want to be in social media or marketing, don't go to college.
I feel terrible telling young people not to go to college, but I am telling them not to go to college.
Yeah, me too.
Like, okay, you're going to leave with $120,000 in debt, and right now entry-level employees are getting hosed harder than I've ever seen them get hosed in terms of the cost of living versus entry. And like me, as somebody who handles hiring and does a lot of entry-level employees, part of that is because I literally can't pay more because we're going to be trading them on their feet. They're not going to be revenue generating right away. So it's we find ourselves in this very awkward situation right now, you know?
It's true. Yeah, it's definitely true. I mean, I feel for people for sure. But it's an interesting world. So, okay, my final question for you is why do you post on LinkedIn? I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, but now that you're sort of where you're at, why do you continue to post there? What drives you to do that?
I think it's still at its core economic opportunity, right? No matter what business I'm in, it does help me make my life more efficient in a time where I need life efficiency, right? I need to be able to pick my kids up from daycare every day and then spend some dad time.
Yep.
If I can save 2 hours of outreach by doing a half hour post on LinkedIn every day and I save that hour and a half, that's huge to me.
Yeah.
But also I think that I am taking pride now as a thought leader in the industry. It de-risks me. Let's say that we are verified. It's not going to, but let's say we are verified disappears tomorrow, right? I need to get another job fast. I've got two kids in daycare and I've got a wife who's on strike right now because she's in the WGA. Yep. I need a job fast. And my LinkedIn presence is going to make people have me be a bit more top of mind. Yep. My resume comes across their desk. They're going to go, Phil Ranta from LinkedIn. I've been following from here. I think about that, or even just putting the open to work thing and saying, hey, everyone, I find myself without a job. I'm an awesome operator. I have scaled businesses. We've had big exits. Let me do it for you. I need to have that funnel.
Yeah.
I think that in my nature, I'm a risk averse person, which is weird that I moved to LA and went into the digital market in 2006, because that's risk, risk, risk. But now that I am where I'm at, I'm I think it's because my parents came up very, very poor. And then when I was young, my dad didn't go to med school until I was already born. So for the first half of my childhood, it was struggle, struggle, work, 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 work. I still have that instilled in me that it's at any day, AI could come take my job and I'm going to be working at Taco Bell again. So how do I keep myself from going and working at Taco Bell again?
Yeah.
I need to be a thought leader. I need to upskill. I need to get soft skills. I need to get hard skills. I need to learn how to, I'm constantly thinking about this stuff, probably to my detriment. I've got anxiety problems, in case you can't tell from the way I talk. And this helps assuage those anxiety problems.
Totally.
LinkedIn feels like I'm being proactive about my career all the time.
That's the line.
That's the line that it took me a long time to get there, but I got there.
That is the line, my friend. Yeah, and LinkedIn needs to grab that. You need to be in you need to be in the advertisement for them.
Oh God, that would be wonderful for my career.
Wouldn't it?
I'll hit up Cayman about that after the podcast.
Yeah, loop me into that conversation.
Oh, totally.
Let me get in there too. Because I feel you. It's the same thing. You're literally, as an entrepreneur, I know. And at any moment, clients could leave, things could happen, stuff can shift, and you always have to be thinking about that. And I think that's what's interesting about maybe our generation versus the younger generation, which hasn't had that experience in life yet. And so they're very much, you know, kind of go with the flow. And I think one of the things that I talk a lot about is, hey, look, it's nice to have all these side hustles now and to do all these things. But a little bit later in life, if you decide you want to have a family, you want to, you don't have time for side hustles, my friend. You got to have one hustle and it's got to do it.
It's got to nail it. Yeah. And I, as an entrepreneur, I feel for you because I don't think I've been a part of a single company that's exited. I mean, I've only been part of three companies that have exited.
Sure.
But where at one point we weren't like, do we have to close the doors?
Oh, 1,000%.
It will always, and no matter how much people at networking events will be like, I'm an entrepreneur and everything's great and we're growing and we're up to the right. Every day they're like, if I don't fundraise by April, I'm out of business. Or if we don't close this account, I'm going to have to fire half my staff. That's the thoughts that are going through 100%. Everybody's head. So. Yeah. Yes. That's where LinkedIn kills it. Is like you have to have constant efficiency and outreach, you know?
Yeah, and you build this presence, whether or not you're an authority or not. The fact that you show up every day is enough. It's like you fake it till you make it in a lot of ways. But I think that that's the trend that brings LinkedIn kind of full circle back to interesting things because you, as an influencer, it's like, yes, so you obviously have a job, a full-time job, but you are influencing the people that need to be influenced at Apple, at Google, at Meta.
Right,
And so for you, I think it's really interesting to have this sort of moment in time where you can capitalize on all of this knowledge that you've built up.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's why the B2B influencer space really is just so powerful.
Yeah, and I still feel like I'm faking it every day.
Everyone does.
In the digital world.
That's why you see all this imposter syndrome stuff on content everywhere.
Our business, things change so fast that anybody that says it's stable is lying all the time. Because, like, what if TikTok goes away tomorrow?
Exactly.
What if AI launches a programmatic offering that makes it completely worthless for us to have the skills we have? Yeah. What if AI influencers grow so quickly that the whole lower tier of creation goes away and is controlled by three companies? These are not Terminator 2, never going to happen situations.
They're
These are things that could happen in the next 6 months.
Oh, 1,000%. I think we were testing ChatGPT to see if they could find influencers for us.
Totally.
And somebody had done it, and they had sent it to us. They're like, oh, look, we found all these influencers. And my head of sales was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Right.
And I was like, give me that. So I was like, these are all fake.
Right, totally.
They've made them up. None of these people exist.
ChatGPT is not looking for the right answer. It's looking for an answer.
An answer, exactly. Yeah. And not to say that it won't get better at it.
Right.
But the reality is the search and social are converging no matter what we do.
Right.
So I think as long as you're ahead of it and as long as you know how to use these tools to your advantage and, you know, thusly your client's advantage, it puts you at the forefront of it and it makes you a value add to all businesses, to all brands, and potential future clients.
Oh, yeah. I am learning AI to de-risk my career. I don't even know if I believe in all of it.
Yeah.
I'm learning it because I think it's an existential threat to me feeding my family down the line. And so I'm learning it out of fear.
So I guess you have two options. You learn AI out of fear or you start a garden.
100%. Yeah.
And you live in LA, so the garden's not as...
It can't do it. Yeah, no. My survival garden is not able to exist in Los Angeles.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, my gosh. Well, Phil, it was so nice to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I guess for everybody out there, give Phil Ranta a follow on LinkedIn so he can feed his family.
Absolutely. Please do. Thank you for having
me.